Good morning and welcome to the roundtable panel for this Thursday morning, the 26th of March. Nice to have you with us, and we welcome you collectively. We welcome you, each and every one of you, and we thank you for being a part of our program. And you can be even more a part of our program, if you simply write to us, roundtable@wamc.org, roundtable@wamc.org. Let me introduce our panel, and then we'll get into the thick of it and talk about a lot of stuff. I always love when we do this on Thursdays because the panel, I feel like they've already had their rehearsal. They've been doing the media project. They've already been,
we've warmed up.
Sniping
that's
at
right.
each other.
Yeah, so you're ready. When you come in, you're good and fired up and ready. So that's always fun. WAMC's Alan Chartok is here. Good morning, Alan.
Hello, Joe.
Hello, Alan. Kingston Freeman, publisher emeritus. Our dear friend Ira Fussville joins us. Good morning, sir.
Good morning. Nice to be back.
Very nice to have you here. And SUNY Albany journalism professor and investigative reporter Rosemary Armeo joins
us. Good morning.
Good morning. Let us begin with the news that broke just about an hour and a half ago, although there were some disturbing aspects of this that have come out over the last 12 to 15 hours of the plane crash in the French Alps. We find out this morning that according to prosecutors in France, that the co-pilot is said to have crashed the jet deliberately. Last night we heard that there was evidence that the pilot was locked out of the cockpit, and we did not know if this was accidental or intentional. And then we find out this morning that indeed it was intentional, and as was the co-pilot's intention to crash the plane. And which answers some of the questions that had come out earlier of why the descent seemed to be leveled and measured and then go into a mountain. So that being one part of the story, the other part of the story being about terrorism and the French prosecutor saying that they do not have evidence of that at this time, of it being terrorism as opposed to
A suicide.
Yes.
Stunning story. Stunning story. Has a black box revelation ever been this amazing, where you hear the pilot who has gotten up and left the room, presumably to go to the bathroom, trying to come back in, and he's locked out, and increasingly he's, as the plane begins descending immediately, is trying to get in and crash in, and he cannot. Amazing stuff, and it makes you have to think, I'm certainly not trying to be alarmist, the prosecutor was being careful and saying we don't know if it's terrorism yet, of course we don't. But does this have anything to do with the other two mysterious flight disappearances we've witnessed in the past year? Malaysia and the more recent one. Those also were mysterious flights in good weather that just disappeared. Same thing going on?
So it's so interesting, Rosemary, that after 9/11, we reinforced those doors and we said we don't want anybody getting in there. Now you have the good guy trying to get back in there and not able to. So you can see that there's this reactive pattern. So what happens next? We figure out that somebody else has to have either the key or the keypad code to get into that thing, that they're probably going to be a push for some more air marshals, you know, on the plane.
Even more than that, yeah. Alan, that there's a code on the door that the pilot inside the cockpit sets that doesn't allow anybody in. You can see the reason for that. If there were terrorists aboard, you want to keep them out. So the terrorists figure out, okay, if we want to take over a plane, we have to be inside the cockpit and lock everybody else out. So has this been years in the planning? They certainly did that with 9/11.
Yeah.
The possibilities are just really
There are so many things we don't know. And we will never know, I guess, why this guy did this.
Well, you don't know that. I mean, he may have family, he may have friends, he may have left a letter, you know.
Okay.
But we said the same thing about those two Malaysian pilots, too, where the plane disappeared.
And we still don't know.
And we don't know.
Yeah. Yeah.
Same
and so,
questions.
But the question that I would have immediately is, apparently in Europe, unlike in the United States, there is no rule that says if one of the pilots steps out of the cockpit, a flight attendant needs to go in so that there are always two people in the cockpit at the same time. So if, in fact, that rule is not in effect there, would this have happened had there been a second person? Now, the second question, and Alan raised it earlier before we went on the air, was the suicidal or whatever pilot could have shot the other one if there was still two people. I wonder, I thought that the pilots go through security just like everybody else. Is there, in other words, could a gun...
Well, they do, but whether... you know, I don't know what the level of security was. This is what we know about the pilot. Co-pilot of the plane has been identified as Andreas Lubitz. He is a 28-year-old German citizen. The French prosecutor said that the co-pilot most likely made the plane crash deliberately and that the pilot had been locked out of the cockpit for many moments.
Through the whole descent, which was about 10 minutes long.
About 10, 15 minutes. And there is a Lufthansa, and Germanwings is going to be having a news conference of what they know in about 10 minutes. This sounds – I wonder, like, why don't you put a bathroom in the cockpit?
That occurred to me, too.
Any reason for the pilots to leave.
You would have to, and I'm sure that's going to be considered.
I noticed on a recent flight that I took that one of the pilots maybe had left the cockpit to go to the bathroom, but spent a considerable amount of time drinking coffee and talking to the flight attendant. So in other words,
which case he's going to have to go to the bathroom again.
That's a good point.
Well, but the point being that going to the bathroom is not necessarily the only reason to leave the cockpit.
No, I guess not. But it's but I'm fascinated by what Rosemary said about the. You know, this guy is 28 years old, which is young, but, you know, how long has this been in? If it was something, and which we don't know and we don't want to.
We don't, and I'm not speculating. Please don't say Rosemary's speculating. But how can you not think about that? That's what they do when they were training all those pilots to fly the planes in 9/11. Could they not have been doing the same thing? We need to be pilots and co-pilots to do this.
Yeah, and I was going to say before Rosemary did, I don't want us here, hopefully, to fall in the trap of doing too much speculation because then we're just going to become CNN. And I dread the fact that when I get home this morning, I'm going to turn on CNN and for the next 12 hours or longer.
Well, it's on right over your head.
Oh, it is.
I'm turning it on as soon as I can.
It's right over your
head.
And there is, and this is a larger issue, and I don't want to get into it, but, you know, there is the idea of and Rosemary makes this point so often, more eloquently than I can, but the fact that, okay, there is speculation, but there's also kind of figuring out what the possibilities are here.
Yeah. The investigators looking at this crash say, before we know everything, we're open to all theories. So I find it impossible to resist this one. Well, I hope it's not true.
Right. No. I don't think you deserve any.
I wasn't
anything
to suggest that.
No.
It's frustrating as a viewer and as a journalist when you watch hour after hour. And maybe that's where the problem is. Watching hour after hour is that all these people do is they're guessing. Just like we don't know.
Well,
nobody
knows. It's more than guessing. You see, Ira, it is creating hypotheses about what could happen in this case, which is all good. In other words, we need to examine every possibility here. So that we make sure that it doesn't get replicated again.
It's also interesting, I will say, that when this initially happened, we were saying on this program, because it had happened just a few hours later, that we were on after the crash, that I believe French prosecutors quickly came out and said that there are no signs of terrorism because of the debris field and so forth. And so we look at that as kind of the
there
sign.
There's no bomb. So
right. There are no
free.
Bombs. Right. So we dismiss that. But then we find out this and we have this on the tape. And then that sort of puts that back on the table. So, there's always those possibilities that come back to trying to figure out what happened. Let's take a break. When we come back, we've got letters on this, and we'll talk a little bit more about it before our news break, where we'll get an update coming up at the bottom of the hour. German officials are going to be updating on the investigation, and we'll be covering that, as will the BBC, and we'll be bringing those updates to you through the bottom and the top of the hour. We'll take a break. We'll be right back after this.
Support comes from Stagecoach Tavern, Route 41, Sheffield, Massachusetts, serving local seasonal fare Thursday through Sunday in historic Stagecoach Inn. StagecoachTavern.net. Albany College of Pharmacy and Health Sciences, offering a bachelor's degree in health and human sciences for students interested in public health and healthcare policy. acphs.edu. And Capital Counseling, mental health therapy for adults, teens, children, and couples in both private and group settings. Your lifeline to better mental health. CapitalCounseling.org.
Welcome back to our roundtable discussion this morning. Alan Chartok, Rosemary Armeo, Ira Fussfeld, and we welcome your letters, roundtable at WAMC.org, roundtable at WAMC.org. I just bring to we have letters to get to, but I just bring to Ira's attention. You know, this is a big story because they just brought in Anderson Cooper.
Oh well, yeah. I'd much rather see Anderson Cooper than Wolf Blitzer.
Right, I'm with you on that.
You don't like Wolf?
Oh gosh, the worst. I don't understand how they've made him almost the face of that franchise. It's just horrible.
Well, they must be. We'll have to talk about that on the media.
And he's a SUNY
sometime.
Graduate, which is distressing.
They
to
must
me.
Be polling.
Yeah, I like him.
Yeah. Some people like do. Some people don't. Okay, all right. Ready. Travis, I'm not buying the suicide thing yet. Why wouldn't the first officer just roll the plane over and put it in a dive and get it over in 30 seconds? Also, it's a pretty short trip. What are the chances the captain would use the bathroom?
Well, depends on how much coffee he had. Alan made that clear.
Yeah. And Michael says, it's important to bear in mind there are 100,000 commercial airline flights per day. 99,999 of them were uneventful and safe, so there's not much reason to get too terribly exercised about it, considering how much is going on in the world. And Rick says...
Well, that's like saying that there are 100 million buildings in the world and only one got blown up, so we shouldn't pay attention to it?
And in fact, Rex is always talking about this is definition of news. You go to the Albany Airport. If every plane lands on time or lands safely, what's the news story? But let one, plane not land.
That becomes one tire pop, and it's a story.
Yeah. Rick says, panel, in the early 2000s, there was a pilot suicide on an Egypt Air flight off Nantucket. It was 767 that he crashed into the ocean. And Carrie says, there are a number of reasons pilots leave the cockpit. I thought he might have gone back to meet the opera singers on board or greet the school children. Tragic. Wondering if he hadn't left, what might have happened? Maybe the co-pilot was looking for an opportunity. I think U.S. flights have a steward sit in the pilot's place. Never anyone alone in the cockpit. This needs to be a requirement for all. And we've heard that. Bonnie says, folks, what, if any, are the mental health annual checkups for pilots, train engineers, or bus drivers? Currently, mental illness has been an unaddressed issue at the heart of many deadly losses. In other words, for example, Sandy Hook. And George says, why is it that we only call things terrorism when there are Muslims involved? This could be skinhead terrorism, or it could be his ex-girlfriend was on board. We just don't know.
Do we say anything about Muslims?
No, of course not. Okay. Philip said, isn't the co-pilot required to use an oxygen mask when the other pilot steps out? If so, could he have been poisoned by sabotage?
His heart was beating steadily, according to the flight box.
Did not have a heart attack. Strong beat. Non-labored breathing.
Right.
Jewel says, so how does this make sense as a terrorist act? I don't get it. Well, of course you don't get it. Nobody gets it yet. I mean, there are many possibilities here. So
it's pretty terrifying, I'll tell you. I'm thinking about, am I going to fly? I'm headed to a country area. Do I fly
ISIS,
now?
ISIS or any of the usual suspects did not claim responsibility.
Not yet, that's the point.
So to that question, if in fact this is somebody who ISIS has turned over and they take credit for it. And then how many more pilots theoretically are there? I mean, we're really taking several leaps here.
You can guarantee by the end of the day, if not by the end of the hour, we're certainly going to know a hell of a lot more about Andreas Lubitz than we knew than we know right now.
Right. And Stephen says this should not be called suicide; it's mass murder. Michael says, given the scenario when the pilot was locked out of the cockpit trying to break down the door during the long descent, why haven't we ever heard about the passengers contacting friends and loved ones on their cell phones? Surely they must have been frantically calling and texting.
Well, I think there were actually two reasons. One was because the plane, when it made its descent, because it was controlled and they were going into a mountain, that according to the flight recorder, there were not screams until the very end. Also, because of the remote area, there would have been no service anyway.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Wow.
And Adrian the Matman says, so we ask, one, is there a TSA-style global pat-down for all pilots? Two, isn't there an emergency override code for those locked cockpit doors? Three, is there a future for Air Force sharpshooters from fighters taking out the offending operator and the door lock?
Yeah, but how do you, well.
Okay.
Those are all good questions. My question, you know, but how do you know? And do you have time?
Okay. Will we, you know, to I guess Alan's point is that by interviewing family, et cetera, we may find out what this guy was thinking. But if we don't, we really will never know what his motivation is.
And if ISIS says we did it,
yeah,
how do we know to believe them?
Right. A lot of times these terrorist organizations purportedly will take credit for something that's not theirs just because they feel like they can glom onto to get the credit.
Just a technical point, it would be Al-Qaeda who this is more their move. That's their thing.
Okay. Yeah.
Jamie says there should be an override safe outside the cockpit that could be accessed to override cabin control and engage autopilot for emergency landing. Mm. Also have ability to monitor and maybe incapacitate those in the cockpit. Okay.
I can't get my headrest to work. I don't know how they would do that.
I hope they didn't even have time to tell people to put the seats up and the tray tables up.
That's what I got.
I'm still marveling at the idea of TSA patting down pilots would solve the problem.
All right. Well,
might not have solved this at all. We're not talking about a guy with a gun.
No, we're not.
A guy with a plane. And I think that's a really interesting point, too, about not being suicide but being mass murder, too, which is another key point. We'll be back after this. Good morning. Welcome back to our roundtable panel. Alan Chartok, Rosemary Armeo, Ira Fussfeld, I'm Joe Donahue, and we welcome you to our panel as well. Roundtable at WAMC.org if you'd like to share your thoughts. There is an update going on now on the crash investigation in the French Alps. And what we're learning this morning is that the co-pilot deliberately crashed the plane, according to prosecutors in the case. A European Aviation Safety Agency, a woman by the name of Dominique Fuda, who was speaking this morning, said that there was no regulatory requirement in Europe for a cabin crew member to be present in the cockpit when one of the pilots leaves for, quote, physiological reasons. That's what it's called.
Physiological reasons. I would word it differently, but I'm not sure I'm allowed to say it that way
on
the air.
No, but basically, unless they have a physiological need, they have to be in the cockpit.
Well, drinking coffee fits that, too.
Yeah, but not going in and, like, yeah. We were talking about saying hi to the people. Right. Mm-hmm. But regulations in Europe allow for the case one pilot leaving the cockpit, and there is no requirement that the cabin crew should enter cockpit at this time. Mm. So.
Well, the rules will change, no doubt. If they can pin down this as the reason, and they're going to have to shore up their policies.
You know, I've always told my students that every time there's a new rule, it occurs because somebody screwed up. So that if you are in the train and you hear the conductor come on and say, ladies and gentlemen, or on the plane, please check the overhead bins because the luggage may have moved and hit you in the head when you open it up. That's because they got sued for $1 million by somebody who got hit by a piece of luggage.
Right.
You're right.
Well, the best example of that is because I know even younger kids, even my nieces and nephews say, well, you know, my God, now that they're learning about 9/11, because they weren't alive for it, so now when they learn about it and they say, well, how did they get on a plane with a box cutter? Well, you could get on the plane with a box cutter. Yes, that was okay. And now that's why that's changed because of this horrific case.
Sadly, there apparently have been enough examples around the country where it's still possible to sneak something through that they
should. Right. Absolutely.
Yes, absolutely, yeah.
As you know, news organizations quite frequently do those tests themselves.
Right.
You know, they try to get through with something to show that.
Fly fairly frequently. Are you part of the?
Don't get Rosemary started.
Well, I'm gonna just stay out of this.
Well, are you part of the TSA pre-check program?
Sometimes not. They decide at lunch.
I've applied for it. I mean, you're a random selectee, which is a problem.
Global Watch?
No, but that's a problem because they do apparently on occasion select people randomly, I guess, based on their history. But if you want to become a full-fledged TSI, you have to be fingerprinted and all the rest.
Pay
it costs
$80.
No, it's $80 for 5 years.
Get...
No, I did it in all.
Really?
I did it online, and I was fingerprinted here in Albany on Everett Road. But my point is, it's great. If you fly often, it's great. It saves you a lot of time. But they certainly don't check you as carefully as they do others.
I looked in the Global Watch program.
Oh, it depends on where you are.
Yeah, I looked at Global Watch, which they also run. You have to. It's the same sort of thing, except it's $100 for a year, and you have to get down to JFK to be interviewed. And I've been now, since I applied for that, at three flights where I watch TSA agents say, we don't have time for that. Just shut down the Global Watch line.
And Global Watch is a worldwide version of TSA PreCheck?
Yeah, exactly.
Well, it is very convenient. I mean, we flew back from Florida recently, and I would dare say we saved about a half hour by not having to wait on the line.
Really?
Yeah. Sure.
Well, I know one time we went there. Roselle, of course, was told to get into the special line for some reason. Mm-hmm. She was excused. And I was patted down.
Yeah, you were a suspect.
So obviously, there's something about me. Mm-hmm. Or it could be a bad hair day. You know what I mean?
I just wish I could be convinced that all the money that goes into TSA could not be better spent on machinery that really checks baggage that goes on or people that goes on better than what we do, or baggage that goes in the back. That's where the bombs are. Mm-hmm. We're not checking that everywhere universally. Cargo, yeah. So...
Well, let us move on to other topics, unless we want to do
some letters.
Letters, and then we'll move on to the topic.
Whatever you want.
Get on to other stuff.
Gloria says maybe they should hire pilots with better bladders. It wasn't terribly long flight before the pilot had to pee. Gloria.
Okay. I mean, that's Tyra's point. That's, you know, whatever goes in must come out.
So they say. Travis says, the oxygen task supplying air to the co-pilot could have been filled with gas other than O2. Another gas that is completely resupplied at airports is nitrogen. 100% nitrogen supplied into the human body can compromise the body mentally and physically.
The strong, steady breathing does not bespeak that kind
of poisoning. Also, not saying a word.
Yeah.
You know, not saying anything, not responding at all. And obviously not being able to, if that were the case, to not be, if you did not want the plane to
help.
Go,
to, said
help. To be able to get the pilot, to bring the pilot back in to unlock the door.
You know what they don't have in cockpits, and I haven't heard it mentioned, so I'm going to take credit for it. They don't have cameras. We talk about how cops sort of carry cameras. You would think that they're much like the black boxes have the recordings. Mm. They ought to have a camera in the cockpit.
That's and maybe, just maybe, since we're getting all these wild ideas about the oxygen and all that, maybe he was hypnotized.
Hypnotized.
Nice, Ira. Okay.
That's
what Gilbert, as Gilbert Gottfried might say, too soon.
Okay. Let's get to other topics. Unfortunately,
that's a lot of cheery topics.
Unfortunately,
on your list today.
I know it was
very
really
depressing
and this wasn't even. I didn't even know. Last night was.
That's why it's always great. Joe sends us all these things. Some people read them. Some people don't. And then,
fill out your bracket now as to guesses to who does who
and
doesn't.
Then we get in here and something else, same thing happens on the media.
Yeah, we started out differently than we expected to today. But you said something yesterday, I'm paraphrasing. It's just very depressing these days. Just generally, you talked about the plane crash before this development, but with all that's going on in the world, I don't know, when I think about it, it's just because I'm older and when you're younger, you're more carefree and the world was always as dangerous as it is now, but it just seems particularly dangerous today for
it couldn't have been as dangerous. I mean, in other words, with everybody having nuclear bombs one way, I mean, think about this for a second. We're arguing with the Ayatollahs about the nuclear bombs in Iran, potential for a nuclear bomb in Iran. But we got Putin, who more and more is acting like a madman, and he's got all the bombs he needs.
Well, you're a little older than I am. I remember the Cuban missile
a
little bit.
Was that a shot?
No. But I remember, as do you, no doubt, the Cuban Missile Crisis. But I don't – and in retrospect, that seems like a terrifying event where we didn't know whether, you know, what Kennedy was demanding of Khrushchev was going to work and whether the world was going to blow up. But I was 14 years old in 1962. I don't remember – feeling as threatened as I would have if I was an adult or as I do now about what's going on in the world.
Yeah, you know, a lot of people went to bed that night, they say, thinking that the world might not be there the next day. Nevertheless, I agree with you. I don't think people had the perception, that perception.
Yeah. It's just maybe there's so much more media. There's so much. It's just a cacophony of this. You can't escape from it. You know, it was only in the morning paper in 1962. Now it's all day, and Wolf Blitzer is heralding it all day. Anyway, I digress.
Okay. Mike says the pilot unions have vigorously fought cockpit cameras for years. Henry says, good morning. I have a comment about the news of the flight which crashed and killed 150 people. What I find interesting in these flight disappearances and mysterious crashes is who was on board, who is importance or significance or prestige. That may help lead us to a motive more than investigating insignificant details about the pilot, such as what high school the pilot went to, et cetera, et cetera. Thank you for your wonderful reporting. And Judy says, I agree with Ira. It's well worth the expenditure of a few dollars and a bit of time to get TSA pre-approval. My husband and I have probably saved a half hour per flight recently going through the much shorter line, plus, in capital letters, you don't have to take your shoes off, which cuts down on the stinks. Okay, I shouldn't have said that. And sorry.
Well, you're right, it does.
Yeah. And then did we read about the pilots
with
better platters?
Yeah, we had that.
And then somebody wrote in favor of Ira, saying Ira's a wonderful guy. I can't find it right now, and it's always
better. No, there was no but.
And it's always better when he's here.
Well, I appreciate that. As my wife must be listening this morning.
All right, let's go to we'll sort of put these two stories together. But there's the air campaign in Yemen and the Saudi Arabia air campaign, and then also the U.S. strike on ISIS. Two stories that obviously would have been our lead stories this morning under any other circumstances. Saudi Arabia announced on Wednesday night that it had begun military operations in Yemen, launching airstrikes in coordination with a coalition of 10 nations. The strikes came as Yemen was hurtling closer to civil war after months of turmoil as fighters and army units allied with the Houthi movement threatened to overrun the southern port of Aden, where the besieged president has gone into hiding.
Well, he actually has left now. He's flying out of there to safety because Aden is not safe.
But I find the Saudi Arabian thing to be fascinating. You know, these are guys who have always depended on the United States and others to do their dirty work for them, at least abroad. And here we have the Sunni, you know, Shia fight coming out just once again. And the Saudis who are not exactly the nicest people in the world when it comes to their own domestic affairs, are in fact doing this themselves. I wouldn't you like to know what the back and forth, the back channel between the State Department and the Saudis or the Defense Department has been before they did this?
You know, I can't call myself an expert on geography, but a lot of us would not have known where Yemen was on the map until recently.
Right next to Saudi Arabia.
It's right next to Saudi Arabia. So there's a lot of self-interest here, and Saudi Arabia must be thinking to itself that if it's between ISIS and al-Qaeda, that these are organizations that are looking to do more than what they're currently doing, and by that I mean territorially.
Sure.
And if Saudi Arabia does not feel threatened by what's going on in Yemen, it would never feel threatened. And so now it's the time. If they are ever going to do it, now is the time for them to act.
But if they are attacked by the Iranian surrogates, do you think that the United States would come in? I do. And I mean fast, just as we have in the past. And
I don't know if it would. It would have to be a catastrophic decision or a catastrophic event, in my view, for the U.S. to go in on Obama's watch. I believe he is so reluctant to use military force, and many would say to his credit, that I think it would be the next president who would make that decision.
Well, maybe.
Unless something really bad happens in the next 2 years.
Maybe. I think we would be there. I think we'd be there, and we'd be there
this
fast.
Whole thing, make no mistake, is a regional conflict between Iran and Saudi Arabia, and both of them have been using surrogates. And now for the United States, it has to figure out if it's relevant at all. The loss of Yemen is huge for the United States. That's where our counterterrorism stuff in that area was based, and now that's lost. So it is these two stories have us on opposite sides. We're helping the Saudis in Yemen. But by moving in Tikrit against ISIS, we're actually helping Iran. That's their battle. We're saying it's Iraq we're fighting for because we have Iraq and Saudi are both the people we're standing in for. So the United States, I think, is really trying to stay relevant in the area, and we're walking a
right
yes, and we're walking a line between helping the Saudis and helping Iran.
Do either of you take the Bill Maher point of view that this is a in effect a civil war, although not necessarily within a country but within that region, and that they should let them fight it out among themselves, and the U.S. should stay out of it?
What you have is an amazing set of political dissolution. You have Libya, Yemen, Syria. There's no state there anymore. And so, yes, you have two units, Sunnis and Shiites, two groups. And within that, lots of different warlords are all fighting each other. It's chaos. And the same sort of thing is happening in Africa, too. We just don't pay as much attention to that further down in Africa, with Mali and the Congo and Nigeria and Boko Haram. This is all part of a worldwide battle to set up, a caliphate.
You know, something you said before caught my attention, Rosemary, and that is, I don't think that the president, even though he has a philosophy, gets to make all the decisions. So if all of a sudden ISIS descends on Saudi Arabia, I think you got a Defense Department. I think you've got other people. The president said he wanted to cut our troops there in Afghanistan by half. He didn't really have a choice. When the guy came and said, "We need you," it was greater than this particular president and this particular philosophy.
Let's take a break. We'll come back and we'll talk about the U.S. airstrikes on ISIS and other stories as well. We welcome your comments. Roundtable at WAMC.org. We'll be back after this.
Support comes from Temple Emmanuel Kingston, hosting the annual Second Night Seder, sharing our parents' traditions with food, music, and children's activities, open to the community, Saturday, April 4th at 4:45 p.m. TempleEmmanuelKingston.org. And Davidson Brothers Brew Pub, featuring food, ales, entertainment, and more, serving lunch and dinner 7 days a week in downtown Glens Falls, New York. DavidsonBrothers.com.
Good morning. Welcome back to our roundtable discussion. We only have about 8 minutes, 9 minutes, and we want to get to two big stories. Of course, the U.S. strikes on ISIS. Thoughts on that?
Well,
the U.S. strikes on ISIS.
I think it's connected to the story we just talked
right.
to. We're now moving in to help basically Iran and Iraq and to get back Tikrit.
Do we know what we're doing?
Well, the forces on the ground had made a lot of advances towards Tikrit. They thought they were going to take it over, and then ISIS came back and held them. So the U.S. is going in to bomb and soften up the lines. They're not fighting on the ground. Yes, to get
I
Tikrit
just think
back
it's
would
so,
be a good thing.
It is so harrowing there and so confusing. As you pointed out, all the various conflicts. I don't know that anybody with assurance and who has the ability to make these decisions knows what's going to work.
Exactly.
And I think that that's very telling when you see and listen to the criticism of Obama and his administration by the Republicans and conservatives, because they're great at criticizing what he's doing, but if you listen carefully, they never
plan.
What are you going to do?
Besides pulling us into unwanted wars, which they had no business doing.
Yeah, so it's another reason to feel depressed about what's going on in the world. I don't. And by the way, I know there is somebody whose name I couldn't remember, but you don't hear the name mentioned as much as opposed to we're going to go after Osama bin Laden, we're going to go after Hitler, we're going to go after Mussolini. I don't know that most people are able to personalize the ISIS movement. There is this
Baghdadi.
One guy,
Baghdadi,
but you don't hear him. You don't hear that name.
No, that's true. On the other hand, you know, there's some personalization when you see Americans' heads being cut off.
Well, I don't deny that, but it's
I don't think of the enemy.
Yes. Yeah, I don't think that there's a.
Well, it's just a sign of how dispersed the battle is.
Yeah,
becoming.
Exactly.
It isn't just al-Baghdadi as important as he is not all important. If he were to die tomorrow, this would not end. We found that with bin Laden.
As David Letterman say, once again, you've crystallized my thoughts exactly.
Let's go to the Bo Bergdahl story and the charges of desertion.
Oh, I feel so sad for him. Messed up kid has gone through enough. I don't know why he has to be charged with desertion.
So this kid.
And worse.
So
and
this
worse,
kid, he
could
leaves.
Go to jail for life.
Well, he does. But there was a leak yesterday from the Defense Department that says we don't want to send him to jail, which confused me. I didn't.
Then why'd they charge him with a charge that could send him to jail for
life?
Well,
I think the second charge is the one that could get
exactly.
him for life, which is putting other troops in danger. And in fact, they're apparently.
It's communicating with the enemy.
Communicating with the enemy. See, I don't know what was going through his head to make him want to desert, but I do. I can see a reason for him to be very seriously punished because you can't send the message to the troops that if they desert, they're going to get off lightly. It's
sure.
just part of the military structure because there are any number of people who probably would like to desert but don't because of the deterrent.
No. I think George Washington had people executed.
I'm rooting for the defense attorney in this one. This is a mess. It's very sad.
I mean, his punishment might be limited to, in effect, time served if you consider that he deserted and then was a hostage and taken by terrorists for 5 years. I mean, that's pretty grueling. But I think they need to do something. I think the other interesting discussion that you're hearing, particularly from the right, is when he was released and they did the exchange of prisoners.
They
exchanged prisoners and those guys are dangerous and now they're back out there. But B, the optics of Obama bringing the mother and father to the White House for this glorious ceremony exalting the fact that they brought this kid home who they even then had a sense that he was a deserter because he left his post.
Yeah.
And was that right?
To throw your argument back at you, that's part of the military tradition too, that you bring back your men no matter what.
Absolutely. Don't disagree. But I wonder whether it required a Rose Garden press conference with the parents to say how happy we are to get this guy back and, in effect, glorify him more than he seems to have deserved to be glorified.
Yeah, it's an example of moving way too fast.
Yeah. And there have been some, presidents do those kinds of things on occasion. It seems to me the Obama administration has done that frequently.
Yeah. I don't disagree with that, but I have to go with Rosemary on this too, that this kid is 28 years old and messed up.
I know. Yeah,
There are kids who are in the Army and at the branch of service when they're 18, 19 years old, and they're put into horrific situations. We feel for them, but you can't have them leaving without expecting to be punished for it. Well, what would that do to the structure of the military?
Well, he has been punished, and the structure of the military wouldn't be touched at all if he were let go. Not at all.
I don't know. We don't know what goes through the minds of those who are active duty, but there might be some who say, "Look, this guy deserted. I don't want to be in here any more than he did." And he was in captivity for 5 years, which is horrific. But now he's out. So I don't know if that's enough.
Certainly, he has been criticized by members of his unit. So that's true.
Right, who could blame them?
Yeah, I don't blame them, but I think
that was immediate.
Yeah,
Obviously they came out quite quickly saying that's how the whole desertion charges started.
Right.
Michael says, "How does Rosemary feel about the six guys who were killed looking for this guy?"
Well, I don't know that's true, but I do feel badly about it, and I also feel badly that we put resources and lives into finding, for example, the bones of Vietnamese soldiers who were killed decades ago. But the military tradition is that you bring back your men. So, if you're gonna carry that to extremes.
Is that it for the letters?
We have one from Susan.
We have about a minute and a half.
I've seen credible journalism connecting ISIS to Wahhabism, which is the leading form of Islam in Saudi Arabia. There's also credible journalism connecting major funding for ISIS coming from some members of the royal Saudi family. This makes U.S. cooperation with Saudi Arabia over Yemen even more interesting, and he wants to hear from us on that.
Well, if you believe what's been in a lot of spy movies over the decades, not just recently, there are so many things going on behind the scenes that make
sure.
make your toes curl up in terms of—
Which is why you can't have a democracy. I've said it 1,000 times, unless you have information. So, you know, what we get, you have to parse all of
that. Well, I'll keep reading, but ISIS identifies with the Sunni movement, not Wahhabism. I don't know. He says credible journalism. I'll look for it. I'm unaware of that.
I'm glad you mentioned that.
And we
That's
have
why
time.
We love you.
That's what we are. We done, or do you
no?
Have
we're done.
Are we done with the letters?
Yeah.
Because we just have a minute.
Yeah. Let's read the one over that says they like me.
Okay. By the way, I did find that, and they said they're not related to you.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
Oh,
so just so you know.
All
sorry.
Right. Well, as soon as they deny it, you know
that you know that they're actually related. That there is a blood relation.
Third cousins.
Absolutely.
Once removed.
My thanks to the panel this morning, Alan Chartok, Rosemary Armeo, and Ira Fussfeld. Thank you all for being with us. We'll see Alan and Rosemary tomorrow. Ira, we'll see you in
I'll wander in here in about April 9th.
That sounds great.
Yes, keep circling on your calendars,
we'll
listeners.
We'll look forward to that. Email your fan and let them know when you're back. We'll be back with a roundtable after this.